You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, showcasing wealth strategies and investment wisdom that is essential for the revolving world. I'm Letitia Burbaum, your guest host today. Thank you, Paul, our engineer here in the studio.
Yes, absolutely. Always brighten our studio when you come in.
Thank you so much. So today I'm really happy to introduce you. We have on the phone Nadine Cano, and who is calling in from Seattle, Washington today. Hi, Nadine.
Hi, Letitia. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Super happy to be here.
Thank you. So I wanted to start a little bit about sharing a little bit about your background, because I'm sure that you're going to share with us a little bit, but I want the listeners to really understand a little bit about who you are. And you, in my eyes, you've been kind of a visionary and someone I have watched grow and develop over the years, and it's been such a pleasure just watching you do so many amazing things. So, you know, just talking about a little bit about your education, you went to Princeton University for computer science, and then you went to Stanford University and got your MBA, and then later on in life, you went to Cordon Bleu in Paris and became a chef, and your journey, you kind of went through this process. You worked for, you know, Microsoft and reinventing yourself, and now you have your own consulting company and, you know, teach at Harvard as an extension program. So I really feel like you're so well, you have so much to bring to the table and so much to offer all of us here. Maybe we can chat a little bit today. My whole goal is for us to kind of walk through what this looks like and the journey that you've gone through, and really then kind of pivot and talk about right now your current company as a consultant, how you're really helping business owners really get in front of the game for their company. So maybe you can start off with a little bit about yourself and your background.
Fantastic. Thanks, Letitia. Yeah, I have a pretty unusual background in that I am quite evenly right-brained and left-brained. Mm-hmm. I've literally taken tests. They give you tests when you're in corporate America, that give you these colors and these shapes, and I always turn out to be half analytical, half creative.
Which is not very common.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual. And to just give you an example, when I was in high school, I won both the math department award and the history department award.
Doesn't
when I was a senior. And although I got a higher score in my SAT math, I was also hyper-trained as a writer. It was a skill my father, who is as a professional writer, said this is the most important skill you'll ever have in your life. And so he would ship me off to Gifty Camp, where I'd have to take writing classes, nonfiction writing classes and fiction writing classes and so forth. And when it came time for me to decide what I wanted to do in college, my father sat me down and he said, all right, we got to figure out what your major is going to be, what you're going to do. And he said, I just want one thing, Nadine. I want you to never be dependent on a man.
Love it.
You know, he was from that generation where women stayed at home and they were mothers, and my mom never went to college and so forth. And he said, no, you need to be able to take care of yourself. And so we picked computer science, which is an emerging field.
Mm-hmm.
We had a home computer. It was probably one of the first families that had a real home computer.
You're dating yourself.
Like I am dating myself. I absolutely am. So we picked computer science because it was a big, a really great cross-section of math and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll date myself even further, Letitia. I was one of the, I was a member of the very first graduating class of Princeton University's computer science department.
And now they're known for their computer science department.
One of the top computer science departments in the world, and it has hundreds of students go through every year. There were 30-something of us at that time. And the class before us was electrical engineering computer science. We were the first computer science class.
Now you see where you get the term visionary from me.
Well, you know, it almost didn't happen. As you know, it's a very male-dominated field. And mm-hmm. at the time, when I came into Princeton, I had taken a couple of computer science classes in high school, but all the boys had been programming. That's all they did in their spare time. And they got to Princeton already knowing how to program very, very well and having put in many, many hours, and I didn't. So it was it took a lot of determination to stay in that field.
Yeah.
And especially when it came time to interview for jobs, because there's all these consulting, management consulting firms and investment banking firms that want to lure you away. I interviewed with Microsoft on campus, and it was very shocked when they hired me because I didn't have the best coding skills in my class. I wasn't the top student in my, I was an average student in my department. I actually got A's in my English classes and my liberal arts classes and struggled in my engineering classes. But Microsoft made very clear to me, they said, look, our practice, our MO is we hire smart people. We hire people based on how smart they are, not on on their current knowledge. You know, anything else we can teach you. And so I went to Microsoft, and I started working on the very first version of Word for Windows.
Which I'm sure everyone has heard of.
Yes, everybody's heard of it, but at the time, everybody was using PC Word, which you probably don't even have never even seen. But it was everybody used PC Word, used DOS operating system, and Windows hadn't really hit, wasn't a hit yet. It didn't reach its heyday till a couple years after I had joined the company. So I was there right at the beginning. I was there before Office. I was there before Xbox. And I got to watch this industry just explode. There were fewer than 4,000 people at Microsoft when I joined.
Wow.
And by the time that I left, 23 years later, I think I had maybe about 100th, the 100th person in seniority in terms of longevity of the company.
That's so wonderful. Congratulations. Yeah. That's huge.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so what I did after I joined Microsoft is I specialized in a field called software internationalization and became known as an industry expert on that. And that is, how do you write software, how do you do the coding so that the program will work in multiple languages so that you can enter in French text or Japanese text so you can translate the user interface into those different languages. And so I shipped dozens and dozens of versions of Word for Windows before I went off to a different job where I started teaching other people how to do that. And this is where we started to marry my left brain and right brain skills.
Nice.
Because I was communicating. I wrote a book about it, published a book with Microsoft Press on how to do software internationalization. And at some point, though, I started worrying about I was being pigeonholed.
Yeah.
So this became the first stage where I reinvented myself. I decided I was going to go to business school.
Yeah.
So I applied to business school, and I got into Stanford, and I was all set to leave the company when a manager, my manager, who's a great guy, his name is Ken Fowles, and he's just a complete renegade rebel, he convinced me to stay at the company and work part-time as an employee while I went to business school, because he worked his way through business school. And so I did that.
So I'm going to pivot you just for 1 second real quick.
Sure.
So I want to just say one thing is I see a lot of clients that get to a point in their lives that they have had a great run with a company, like what you're saying so far, and had watched the company grow and develop, and then now they're going back to the, like you're saying, like, you know, you're the Nadine 2.0. You're like, oh, now I want to make sure that I'm not just, like you said, pigeonholed in one area. What else am I missing? Where do I want to be? That you're starting to ask these big questions. You know, there's more to your career than just, you know, what you've defined at that point. So I think that it's, you know, I appreciate your, like, keep on going, but I want to make sure our listeners are understanding, like, there's pivotal moments that we help, you know, clients and people, we're seeing them go through these transitions. So this is great. You're adding more pieces. You're kind of making creativity. You're making it part-time. And you're kind of changing your job title and kind of going after that MBA as well. So please keep on going. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, I wanted to get an MBA because I wanted to go back to school.
Yeah.
And I wasn't the best student at Princeton, I told myself, even though it didn't really matter in the end because I had a very successful career so far.
Yeah.
But I kind of had that pain of I wanted more education. So let me go back and do that. Let me see what else. I don't want to just do software internationalization. I want to do something. I want to expand my horizons. I want to be taken seriously on a broader playing field.
Yeah.
And so I went back to I went to Stanford, and I was working, and actually, when you're at Stanford, you have a whole bunch of people coming to recruit you and so forth, and so I had dinner with Steve Jobs, and I was down there, and after that, I said, well, you know, hey, all these executives are courting these Stanford students, so I sent an email to Steve Ballmer, And I said, hey. I think you should have to convince me to come back to Microsoft.
Yeah.
So he had lunch with me, and he convinced me to come back, and I actually ended up spending like 15 more years at the company.
Amazing.
And so when I came back from business school, I didn't want to do software internationalization anymore. And so I had this, again, this right brain, left brain tension. I said, yeah. Well, I don't fit the mold. I'm not a classic engineer. And at the time, it was very difficult to get, you know, like a really straight, high career trajectory if you weren't an engineer.
Yeah. You kind of had to pave your own path.
I absolutely did.
Mm-hmm.
I had a different skill set. I had a very unusual specialized skill set in this right-brained part of me. I had the technical knowledge and the technical skills, but I had these communication skills. So a couple of executives, you know, kind of, I would say, discovered me. One of them was an executive who had actually interviewed me on my on-campus interview back at Princeton, and he hired me to come be his communications manager. And then he became the senior vice president of the Windows division at Microsoft. And then I went to work for his boss, being his communications manager, and I did that for 10 years. And these were two people who were like, "No, okay, she's not a classic engineer, but she can do stuff I can't do.
Yeah.
She can write, she can communicate," and they being very technical people, that wasn't their strength, and they appreciated that I was different.
And
that's another thing I would...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's really good, because your confidence and being able to just say, I'm paving the path, saying, hey, look, this is what I want to do, and also finding people who saw potential in your skill set.
Yes, and seizing that opportunity.
Yes.
To do that. But I really have so much appreciation for both of those executives. They were great mentors to me, that they said, well, no, because you don't have the traditional engineering skills, that doesn't mean that you're less valuable. That means you're more valuable because you have that basis and you can do all of this other stuff that we can't. So that's what I did. And, you know, different experiences in my different parts of my life that may seem completely unrelated really helped me succeed in this field, like hobbies. I'm sure so many of your clients, your listeners, have these hobbies that they just follow because they're passionate about it, or they want to contribute back to the world, and they don't know, what does it have to do with my career?
Yeah.
But one thing that I did is I, as you know, Leticia, I practice Buddhism, and I belonged to the organization's translation group.
Hmm.
So we would get articles from Japan, speeches and things, that they would want the Japanese speakers to translate into English. Now, my Japanese isn't great. I studied it in college and in business school. But I had a great command of the English language, so they would pair me up with a Japanese speaker. And the Japanese speaker would do a rough translation, and then that I would finesse the English and constantly asking the Japanese speaker, is this what is really being said? Because, you know, these are matters of the soul we're talking about when you're translating Buddhist things. You want to make sure you're 100% accurate about the spirit of the intent of the writer or the speaker in this case. And so I was so conscious of this that I was always trying very, very hard to make sure that nothing I wrote would in any way alter that original intent. And this became ingrained in me through this translation group. And I carried that back to when I worked with the executives at Microsoft, or I work with now when I work with clients, how can I capture that person's voice?
Mm.
How can I capture their personality? How can I capture their intent, their philosophy, and take what they say and then enhance that by what I know about them as a person, to make sure that their message gets across as sincerely, accurately, and powerfully as possible. So that one hobby that I had, that volunteer work that I did, completely shaped my career.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you never know.
Yeah, no, it's so true. So I want to make sure, because of time and making sure that we're able to really talk about like what you're doing now, I want to make sure we're transitioning. What does that look like of all of the things in your experience and in your past and what you do? Kind of describe what you do now. I mean, my understanding is you're a consultant. You help companies along this, you know, with creating strategies or pitch books or startup companies to really get them to the next level.
So right before I left Microsoft, I did a stint in marketing, I did a stint in IT, and then the last job that I had was helping Microsoft identify and invest in promising startups.
Okay.
So then I went out on my own.
Okay.
And I took this path passion I had about communications, and I turned that into my own business, which I co-founded with a longtime colleague. And what we do, we say that we're storytellers. We tell stories.
Yeah.
And we specialize in technical stories. And this can be in any number of formats, whether it's a presentation or, you say, like a pitch book, white paper, ebook, videos, and so on and so forth. But we're there to help our clients tell their stories. And once I left Microsoft, surprisingly to me, I had a lot of startups approach me. People who are old colleagues of mine, old friends of mine, had their startup ideas, or I became involved in startup communities where we would listen to people give pitches. And one thing I noticed is that, you know, there are startups that do really great pitches, of course, and you don't have to have the perfect pitch deck in order to get funded and so forth, but many startups struggle to tell their story. It's like writing a resume.
Yeah.
When I help friends with their resumes, it's like, are you really capturing the spirit and the essence of what's unique and different about you? Why it's better than anything else out there? And why people should listen to you, why they should invest in you. And it's hard. Sometimes it's hard, like if you're a professional musician and you go to an amateur open mic night. It's hard to watch people give presentations and say, wow, there's so much more to their story that could be better.
And they need someone like you. You're able to kind of see through and say, okay, I can see how you can improve this, or I can see how you can tell your story better.
Right, right. And that's what I like to do.
I love it. So what are... If you were going to say you were going to create, let's say, like the pitch book, what does that look like? Well, I guess what are a couple, if you were going to be an outsider looking, advising this company, what are a couple key things that you would give them advice to, just big picture, to kind of look for some pitfalls to avoid?
Sure. Now, there's different ways that you can do, for example, a startup pitch.
Okay.
And there are people like Guy Kawasaki has his template that he encourages people to fill out, like, here are the different things that I as an investor would like to know. So you can start that way. You can start by just taking a slide template and filling in answers. But that's not telling a story. That's filling in a
sheet. Blanks. Yeah.
Yeah, it's filling in a blank. So you want to start thinking about, how to tell your story.
Yeah, what's
and
your
here's
message?
How I do it. Here's how I construct it, because we learned this. I've literally done thousands of presentations in my career, or hundreds and hundreds.
Okay.
And we would run into these issues when we're working on a presentation of writing these beautiful slides and putting together a slide deck, and then the slides would get thrown out because they weren't used, because it turned out they weren't relevant to the story. So we said, enough of this madness. It's very inefficient. So we now break it down at like you're making a movie in Hollywood. We use Hollywood's actual process, which I learned from working with some people in Hollywood.
So interesting.
So the first thing we do is we create a treatment document.
Okay.
And in Hollywood, you create a treatment. It's like a 6-page synopsis of your story that tells the whole story of how it happens in a synopsis format.
Sure.
And we create two sections. The first section we call the assumptions.
Okay.
And the assumption is making sure that the person who's helping tell the story and the person telling the story are on the exact same page about all the parameters. Who's the audience? What does the audience care about? What are the audience's objections to, say, the technology you're trying to sell them? Are there any market landscape things we need to know to set context for the story? What is the style we want to tell the story in? Do we want it to be informal, formal, business-like, conversational? How do we want to do it, represent it visually? Is it very heavy on photography or line art, or is it heavy use of color, or is it stark and plain? So we get all of those questions answered at the very beginning.
Which makes sense,
any further.
That way you don't have to keep on going back and making revision after revision after revision. You guys are both on the same page.
Right, because we don't know what is in each other's head.
Right.
And this process has actually caught us several times. Even recently, we had one client where we realized we weren't on the same page. We thought we were, but we ended up, because we followed this process, we ended up not having to redo a whole bunch of work later. So what we do is we write the story. After we have all the assumptions, we write it out like a narrative.
Yeah.
And that we call that like writing the script.
Okay.
Like you're writing a script for movies. So that's that part. And then you storyboard it out.
Okay.
That's what they do before they actually film, so you don't just waste a bunch of time and filming things.
You're visualizing, making sure the message is actually mm-hmm. what you guys are conveying in the very beginning.
Exactly.
I love it.
So, like a PowerPoint with no design or no art, and mm-hmm. we actually literally describe it. Okay, here's the text on the slide, and here's, we describe in words, like in yellow squares that look like sticky notes, here's what this is going to look like.
I love it.
And then we work on that for a while, and we agree, we get the story flow right, or do we need another slide here, or is this, do we have too many, et cetera. And now you know you have a real cohesive story, and then the last step uh-huh. is that we take it to the designer. And that's what you call, like, you would
pictures
say...
Pictures or the
when
images.
When you fill out the storyboard, that's like filming the movie.
Got it.
And when you take it to the slide designer, that's like doing the special effects and final post-work
nice.
To get it ready for a presentation. And that's the process we follow for every kind of delivery we do, not just PowerPoint presentations, but we write a treatment first.
Oh, I love it. That's so great. So, okay, I really love how we've gone with this. In the beginning, we've learned, you know, a little bit about you and your history and your experience, and now you've really created, you've really created a company that you're able to really give back, and you've really transitioned over time. Do you have any, takeaways that you would say to company owner? Because, for example, we have people all the time that are getting ready. You know, they've either just sold their business, now they have a great idea, and they really want to take this to the next level, the next step, and they have this idea. You know, how do they find someone like you out there?
I think for myself, because I've been doing this consulting for about 6 years now, and I'm ready to join a startup myself or to start one or do something, it's not something you can just decide, like, oh, I'm going to go look at the classifieds and find a startup and join it. You have to build your network.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've been in business for so long, and I went to 2 amazing schools and know people, well, 3 amazing schools if you count culinary school, even though that's not the same business, it's not high tech, I've started going back to and meeting with people that I've known for years who are very successful, work for Amazon or Microsoft or out on their own.
Yeah.
I have classmates who are VPs of companies and CEOs of companies, and I sit here and I think, well, gee, what have I done, right? I have a little boutique consulting firm and so forth, but I tell myself, no, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I went to the same schools. Yep. I worked in tech for so long.
Yeah.
It's time to be bold.
Yeah, I love it.
Bold. And so it's like people will always say, well, you can't just wait around for something to come across your lap, or luck is when opportunity meets preparation, or these kind of cliches that people say. But one conversation does lead to another, because you meet with somebody you know, they know somebody, they introduce you to that somebody, and lo and behold, before you know it, you have to assemble your dream team of where you're going to embark on your next project. So ideas many people can have ideas, and ideas change all the time. When you're doing a new company, a new venture, the most important thing is who are the people you have with you.
Yeah, your team, and you're building that team through your connections, and you're continuing to develop that over time.
Right, and most startup investors will say the first thing they look at and what they invest in, first of all, is the team, not the idea, because the idea can change.
No, that makes sense. So we have about just a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, we ask every person who's on our show, is what's your ultimate lesson learned? We just have just a couple minutes left, and I wanted us to make sure that
lesson learned.
Yeah, we can ask you.
Well, I think back to those formative years, and then my father sat me down right before I went to Princeton, and he went to Princeton too, so he had a unique perspective.
Yeah.
That he could guide me, and he said, Nadine, look, you're not going to college so that you can get a job. You're gonna get a job.
Yeah.
You're going to college so you can learn how to create jobs for other people.
So
and so I have focused so much of my career on how do I create opportunities for other people, which is a really great thing. But you have to balance that, right? It's for yourself and for others.
Yep.
It's that balance. So I have to go out and create opportunities for myself as well.
Yep.
So striking that balance, I love creating opportunities for other people. And by creating opportunities for myself, I will also create opportunities for other people. It's like, go seize the day. Don't be afraid. Be bold.
Yeah.
And, Russell Wilson famously, his dad said to him, well, why not you? So yeah. Ask yourself, why not me? Well, I can do it.
Well, I think it is you are next, and I can't wait to see the company that you're going to be starting up and having people work with you. And if you want people to find you, how can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I'm on LinkedIn.
So you're Nadine Kono. So it's Nadine. Last name is K-A-N-O.
K-A-N-O. Right. Yep. Or Nadine K at Arioso, A-R-I-S-O, A-R-I-O-S-O dot G-R-O-U-P. Nadine K at Arioso dot group. That's my email.
Perfect.
Feel free to reach out to me that way as well.
Yeah, and you can also reach out to us here at the podcast, Zandbergen Report. And I would love to make sure that everyone is listening and sharing our podcast. And if you learned something today that you want to find out more information about, you can email us. You can also email me, and I can get you in contact with Nadine. My email is Letitia at OptiVestInc.com, and that's L-E-T-I-T-I-A. At OptiVest Inc. That's OptiVest Inc.com. And you can also find us on our podcast. We are live on iTunes, and we're really excited to be here today. And thank you so much, Nadine, for being a guest today.
Thank you, Letitia. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so fun. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzandbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zandbergen Report? Email podcast at bartzandbergen.com.
The Zandbergen Report is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. The content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host, Bart Zandbergen, or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.